Where'd you find this?
Hey, Craig. I haven't talked to Craig in a while. I mean, like, it's just good to see him again. Also, he good misses, to see you guys.
He misses you, Waleed. Like, we miss you.
You're here.
You guys see each other at least twice a week on the football absurdity sphere of Gamble Town and Farceball.
Yeah. And now we're doing the trifecta. I see Waleed. I'm seeing Waleed Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
By the way.
I am so excited to watch that Bears game.
God.
And all I can't wait. I will not tell you my same game parlay until we're on the air because it's so dumb.
I'm here for it.
You have to bet dumb on the Bears this week. Otherwise, there's no fucking hope.
I mean, like, oh my God. There's no hope. Like, let's not kid yourself. Tony and I, hope died a long time ago. Hope is a lie. As I like to say, hope is a lie.
We are soulless here, and this is TH Fantasy episode 99.5. Ryan actually during Farceball last night was like, hey man, if you want to hop on the Discord and chat, like, let me know. And I'm like, I'm doing Farceball, and he's like, oh fuck, it's Thursday, which is like the dream. The dream.
Yeah.
So Ryan's still off the grid. Waleed Ismail, my man, filling in. It's Friday night, ladies' night. How are you doing, Shane?
Doing all right, man. I'm tired, but we're getting through this. A lot to talk about today. I know it's a one-off episode, but we got a lot of theory and reflection to do, at least on my end.
I meant to ask this before we're on air, but I'll just gonna say it now. Now I know Ryan usually does his mid-tier shitty tight end of the week.
Correct.
I am willing to fill that role because I have a couple of really shitty tight ends I want to throw out there.
Let's talk. So we're going to piece together. This is going to be a fun laid back. This is like after hours, TH Fantasy. We're going to do a little less structured stuff. I think the plan today is I have a segment, a history segment that I want to start with. I think we're going to do our State of the Union roundtable. We'll go to commercial, and then you guys each have segments to take us home.
Hell yeah.
And our DFS lineup, right?
The DFS lineup as well. The DFS
lineup. I am excited for this.
I think we're going to have a lot of fun this week. So I get to start this week. How cool is that?
Can I jump in real quick, though?
Yeah.
Real fast. Yeah. So my dad was explaining to me DFS, but without using, like, DFS terminology or like fantasy football to me, and he's like, yeah, you like you have a budget and you got to pick these players and they got to score points. I was like, you're playing fantasy football, fucker. Like, right. this is what we do on a week-to-week basis. He's like, really? I was like, yeah. He's like, oh, that's pretty cool. I was like, where the fuck you been, bro?
Is your dad gonna join the Discord?
Oh god, dude.
That'd be so great. Oh my god. Like, although, like, I don't, is he a boomer? Is he gonna be like, is he gonna have that boomer mentality? He's gonna come in here and then we're gonna have to like jump on him for like having like don't get me wrong, my parents say some semi-racist things too. So,
no,
like, he doesn't. There's a certain age group where you're just gonna be like, look, like that's not okay, but I understand that you're too old to course correct here, and I know you don't kind of mean it. Like my parents, like, you know what I mean? When they like, cause like the one thing as a minority I've learned is when people actually mean it. You know?
Oh no. No. My dad's only ignorant when it comes to technology. Like I type his emails for him sometimes at work. So like if he had to be on like a live action message for him, I think his brain would fucking melt. So yeah.
Bro, my dad will tell me to like go to a website and I'll just say, and I've done this multiple times. I'm like, can you just send me the link? And his response is, I don't do that.
You don't play that shit.
He just has me Google and search for it myself instead of literally copying and pasting.
Yep. All right, Tony, show us some history along with these boomers.
Yeah, like football absurdity, new tagline, a place for dads. all right, so I got my little history segment here. We're going to switch it up this week, and I want to keep it topical, interesting, and relatively short for my friends here. So instead of focusing on a single guy or a draft or a season or even a play, we're going to go with something that I don't think I've ever done before, and we're going to focus on a single game, all right? And so we're going to look at a matchup from 2007 that featured two teams that we're going to be talking about a lot on this episode, the Minnesota Vikings and the then San Diego Chargers.
Ooh,
dude, we're going to repeat that shit this week.
Yeah, this game, I remember the big parts of this game, but there were a lot of intricacies that I thought were pretty interesting and noteworthy. So you'll remember the big plays, but let's go through it. This is rookie year Adrian Peterson before the world knew how much of a monster he was.
I mean, the college world knew.
That's fair. A few weeks before this game, Adrian Peterson ruined the Bears. Like, he broke the Vikings single game rushing record with 220 yards on 20 carries, which is what the fuck. In that game, even though it was like week three or week four, he set the Vikings record with most 100 yard rushing games in a season.
That's embarrassing.
Wasn't he returning like kicks and punts too in that game?
Funny you should say that, because he sealed the win with a kickoff return that gave them the field position that sealed the game, because it was a back and forth game.
Yeah. Rookie year Adrian Peterson actually like was fielding punts and kickoffs, which was insane.
So this game, the Vikings are at home. They're 7-point dogs. They're going against a Chargers team that had Phillip Rivers, LaDainian Tomlinson, Vincent Jackson, Antonio Gates, and Northern Illinois University legend Michael the Burner Turner.
And we didn't win a single championship.
Insane. So the first two drives of this game ended in 1-yard touchdown runs for both LT and Adrian Peterson, respectively. And the second quarter had 7 punts.
God damn.
And so it was going to end scoreless, and they were going to go into the half 7-7, but Ryan Longwell was brought in to kick a 57-yard field goal at the end of the half. We know where this is going. The kick falls short. Cromartie barely stays in bounds, catches it on the back line, and returns the missed field goal for an NFL record 109 yards and is completely untouched.
That was my brother's screensaver for like at least a decade. Like when he leaned back and caught it, yeah.
I think he fathered a couple children during that return. So at the half, Chargers are up 14-7. And here's the thing that's interesting when you know how this all ends. Peterson ended the first half with 43 yards on 13 carries.
So in typical Charger fashion.
Here we go.
Here's the turn.
So the second half didn't look good to start for Minnesota. Tavares Jackson goes out with an injury. He gets replaced by Big Ten legend Brooks Bollinger. And on their sixth offensive play, Peterson takes a third and short carry, 64 yards for a touchdown to tie it 14-all. Brooks Bollinger keeps the team going by doing the obvious, giving the ball to the guy that's really good at football. And the defense adjusts to this like good teams do, something that we're not as Chargers and Bears fans respectively. like good teams do, Minnesota counters that adjustment. And they actually go ahead with a 40-yard touchdown pass to Sidney Rice, also a famous Remember a Guy. So they go up by 7. Nate Kading kicks a field goal to make it 21-17. Peterson actually fumbles in the red zone on the next drive, and the Chargers get the ball back. The Vikings make a stop, and then the offense takes the field, and Peterson has a 46-yard touchdown run. Right? So after yet another defensive stop, it's a 2-score game, backup running back and future Bear complete waste of space, Chester Taylor, punches one in and makes the game 35-17. But as this is happening, Peterson starts approaching history. So with 2 minutes left, they get the ball, offense is on the field, and he has 38 yards to go before he can break the single game rushing record. So even in an icing the clock situation where everyone in the world knows he's getting the ball, he gets a 35-yard run and then gets his 3 additional yards 2 carries later to set the all-time NFL record for rushing yards in a game with 296.
You can't see, but I'm at the edge of my balcony in my apartment complex right now.
See, I wanted to like trigger warning this for you, Shane, but at the same time, like, I appreciate your Chargers fandom, because it's a lot like my Bears fandom, where I'm like, well, it might as well all just fall on me. Fuck it.
I was born to be disappointed, right? Yeah. Not that I was born a disappointment, but like I'm just addicted to it, right?
I love football season because I can dissociate for 3 hours and just be like nothing matters.
Yep.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. So to put a bow on this game, the Vikings end up with 378 team rushing yards on the day.
Oh my God.
That's actually surprisingly 7th in NFL history. So the only team since 2007 to have more rushing yards in a single game is Baltimore with 404 against Cincinnati in 2021, with Lamar Jackson, J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, like, doing most of the work. The thing that's most impressive that Shane alluded to earlier is that 253 of those rushing yards came in the second half alone. And the most impressive part is that this one game set two NFL records that still stand to this day. So I'm hoping their matchup this weekend has even a fraction of the fireworks that this one did. And that's the Vikings Chargers from 2007.
Damn, dude.
Hell of a game.
I'm ready to be disappointed this weekend.
I think, like, the cool thing about doing so much, like, DFS stuff that we do is, like, I really only care about the offensive guy, like, 30% of the formula. The other 70% is how bad is the defense.
Yes, 100%.
So
that's all the gambling lines, right? Every gambling thing I look at, I don't look at the player because I know what they can do. I'm like, okay, here's targets, target share. What's the defense doing? Oh,
right.
They're like number two worst against the slot. All right, pick the slot receiver. That's why we cashed with Keenan Allen last week, right?
Right. And Keenan Allen also fucking dog.
Well, yeah. Oh, man, when he fucking small man that DB, that was so sick.
That was awesome.
You go, old man.
And so let's do kind of a segment that we've kicked around in the group chat about for the last week. Shane's idea of like a state of the union. And so we're going to kind of talk about like where we're at in terms of the season, in terms of our ideas that we went into the season with. How are your teams doing? No one really cares about our individual teams, but I want to talk a little bit about what we felt like we got right. I have, I don't know about you guys, but the way that I kind of broke this down was like, I have a victory lap I want to take. I have a player that I refuse to take the L on, and then I have a player that I am willing to take the L on.
I just have two general thoughts that I have and what my approach is. And frankly, I'm doing well, so they're just positive because I'll be honest, I'm awesome. And you guys are awesome because I leaned on you guys a lot because I was doing a lot of side work on learning coding and stuff like that this offseason. So I didn't do the research I wanted to, but you guys, your breakdowns early in the season were just fantastic, and
that's why we brought you on to gas us up. Waleed, why don't you start? Give us one of your reflections that you want to share with everybody.
So one of the big things, start with the caveat that I'm an auction guy. I don't understand anyone wanting to do a snake draft. That is so boring to me. I want to get the guys I want. I want to build the roster. I want to scout players, see where there are. Because I know who I think is going to be good, and I don't care what the consensus thinks. I don't. I'm going to win or lose by what I evaluate is a good player. And honestly, I don't need to do that much scouting because I watch football. Like, I know what guys are going. Like, I know how second, third year, fourth year players should project. I know, like, who's a good football player, who isn't. So when I look at something like, okay, you know, here's a victory lap. Gabe Davis. Nobody loves Gabe Davis more than me. Isn't that right, Tony?
You're the biggest. Waleed's the biggest Gabe Davis fan.
I love Gabe. I don't care if you say you like Gabe Davis. I like him more. I love Gabe Davis. And I felt like the market was just wrong about him. Like, everyone was like, he was a disappointment last year. He was on a top five scoring offense, and yeah, he was like inconsistent. He was a second year player. He had 90 catches, or is it 90 targets? 90 targets. But still, 90 targets. Hurt. Number two, yeah, he was hurt the second half of the season too. That's the thing that people seem to forget. People always forget when a guy gets hurt, or like guys who are good for like multiple years in a row, like Mike Evans, another one who was seriously undervalued. What was it? I was showing off the bet, and Ryan, he's like, I showed five wide receivers that I bet would hit 1,000 yards, and I did a round robin on them at the start of the season, and it was Tyler Lockett, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Drake London, which is not looking good so far, and who's the fifth one?
Well, whatever. Gabe Davis twice.
It was someone in that middle.
Who was it? Mike Evans.
No, Mike Evans is the fourth guy. I'm trying to think of who the fifth one. But Mike Evans was the guy that, like, he's like, I like all of those except for Mike Evans. Mike Evans is 25% of the way there. Mike Evans, all he does is get 1,000-yard seasons, and we seem to forget that.
And
yeah, and that leans into my issue, right? Like, I don't, yeah. we can circle back to your point, but like a big issue for me that I realized is during the process, I don't know if I hit burnout or whatever, but like I forgot that these teams are not just going to fucking roll over and die, right? These teams are not going to put up 0 points every game. They're not going to get zero receptions every game. So there are players that even though we don't know what they're going to do, like Baker Mayfield with a new offensive coach, but Baker's a perfect circumstance of this dude plays better when there's no consequence. You just let him go out there and sling the rock, dude. He balls out every week, and that's a mistake.
I'm going to say this because... Baker, like, this is, like, one of the questions I was actually going to ask. I'll ask it now because we're talking about it. What if Baker Mayfield keeps going? But I'm going to be honest, like, Baker Mayfield, he played the Vikings and the Bears. Like, let's slow it down a little
bit. This week is the test against the Eagles. If he can do decent with the Eagles.
Not necessarily, because they're giving up a lot of, like their pass defense has some flaws. But I think also... I think they're full. Like, I think that's like Baker Mayfield was a guy when I started my research at the beginning of the week. I was like, oh, he's a good cheap play who could get some value. But the more I look at it, like on a per play basis, the Eagles do not actually give up a lot of yards in the pass game. And I think that defensive front is going to give them a lot more trouble. The Bears had one registered pressure all game on Baker Mayfield. Yeah. It's very easy to look good as a quarterback if no one's getting to you. That's not going to be the case with the Eagles.
Do you remember what happened when the Bears got that pressure on Baker Mayfield? He fucking sidearmed the ball to like Rashad White at the last second because he was playing fucking big dick ball.
Yeah, yeah, but you know what? Don't get me wrong. I think Baker Mayfield's a trap this week. At the same time, I hope I'm wrong. Baker Mayfield being good at football is only good for football. Let Baker make.
And I think that's the thing too, right? Is like we've seen what Daniel Jones has done under pressure. Where like that's my big caveat for like Kirk Cousins and Baker Mayfield. They're both going to sling the rock because they have a good offensive ability to do so. It just depends what they're going to do under pressure this week. If they can handle the pressure, it's wheels up for both guys.
Sure. And I think that's also the disconnect between fantasy value and like good football player.
Yeah.
Because like Baker Mayfield's first 2 weeks is the exact reason why you should not take anything in training camp too fucking seriously. Because remember, there was a week where everyone thought this was Kyle Trask's team.
No, okay. Hey, people thought the Bears'
offense looked really good, and then it just turns out all they've been doing is going up against the Bears' defense in training camp. So of course it looked good.
Same with the Chargers.
There you go.
But then again, that bleeds into my next point of like the Rams, right? I was so burned out at the end of this shit. I was like, Matt Stafford's cooked. They're done. They gave up last season. But it's like, no, dude. Like, I am gonna lose leagues because I skipped over, granted, Puka Nacua was like, who could have guessed his fifth-round rookie who got 50% snap share in college as a fifth-round right?
You guys are already hitting questions I have here. This is one of the questions I was going to ask later. No, it's just very simple. How did we forget that Sean McVay and Matt Stafford are good? Like, that's a thing that, like, it's one of the things. People forget, like, a year off, if it's been over a year, we forget like very important facts. Sean McVay is one of the best coaches in football. Matt Stafford is a good quarterback. And without Matt Stafford, that Rams team was terrible. But like also they had so many catastrophic injuries last year.
They just gave up too.
No, I mean, there was a certain point where they were just kind of like, there's no point in doing this. The season's over. And actually, I kind of commend them for that because if you're not making the playoffs, who the hell cares?
Yeah, especially when you don't have your first. It's like, all right, whatever.
And doesn't that really – I think that really answers your question, Wally. It is like I am on record, on tape, if you listen back to the old episode, saying like Matt Stafford can still fucking spin it. But the issue is that he had a neck injury last year.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He looks healthy for the first time in a very long time.
They inject him with all that angiochrome. He's full of fucking babies, dude.
Hey, just inject all the stem cells into his spine. It'll be fine.
And that's the same thing too, though. With like I will admit, dude. Like Tony, you told me what about Kyron Williams, and I said I don't care. And look how much that made me look like a fucking fool right now. You know what I mean? Because like Cam Akers' tea leaves were like sitting looking at us right in the face. The dude wanted out. They didn't want to use him. He didn't ever do anything. The McVay system always has a split back pair, and clearly Akers wasn't the guy. And Kyron Williams was hyped up last year too. Kyron Williams,
Cam Akers thing, like in hindsight, every one of us should be like, we are so stupid.
Oh yeah,
like, so we just kind of rode that wave of what seemed like what was happening, even though no.
But I'm telling you right now, if he didn't retire in July, I would have ended up with 50% Sony Michel exposure because I was waiting for that Rams RB2. And yeah. I have a bunch of Sony Michel from early best ball drafts because all the numbers pointed to this being a two back system.
It's still going to be a two back system. We just have to see who rises to the top in that thing because right. Kyron Williams can't do it all by himself for the whole season. No. It's just not going to happen. They have to bring somebody else in or someone's going to have to come up from the depth chart.
Right. So I want to take my Josh Kelly victory lap right now. one of my big things, similar to the Rams, was looking at the offensive schemes of Kellen Moore, and recognizing that like there's space for a Zeke role, and I was expecting him to contribute even without Austin Ekeler getting hurt. So him and McKinnon were my two most rostered backs in best ball over the summer because I'm like. I think that even before all of the Austin Ekeler stuff, I thought that he was going to have a role when Ekeler was healthy.
He had the same amount of touches in game one as Austin Ekeler did.
Right.
He was
going to get the Zeke role. And like, that's a valuable role in a high powered offense. And so even when Ekeler comes back, I think he's still going to give you a few solid RB2 weeks, and I think he's going to be a solid option in your flex during buys or whatever as the season goes along.
It's the Tyler Algier thing, right? Tyler Algier thing of like you don't give away person who just produced his role, right? Just because like your star comes back doesn't mean like, hey, like say Philadelphia, for example, that is DeAndre Swift's backfield now because that dude ripped it up for 170 yards. They're not going to give it back to Penny. They're not going to give it to Gainwell. Coaches want dudes who are going to produce. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to continue to produce, even if the star comes back, they can rotate you, right? Because theoretically, the Chargers are trying to make the playoffs, right?
I think it's more likely going to be a rotation in Philadelphia.
Oh, 100%.
And I'm going to say that because it's always been a rotation in Philadelphia. That's getting like Bill Belichick status of I'm just not going to try to predict a running back. Like, I don't want to. It's too much work.
Well, that was also, too, like last year, Miles Sanders' highest snap share percentage was 77%. And DeAndre Swift saw that last game. But that could be, again, like you just said, that could be his season high production because they're trying to win the playoffs. They're trying to win a Super Bowl. They're going to have to keep these guys fresh.
Yeah.
Yep. 100%. Waleed, what do you got? Give me another one of your lessons learned.
I think I got sidetracked on my first one when I was talking
about. You don't say.
Yeah, I know, like, because I'm usually so focused. So, like, we're 2 weeks into the season, and everyone's already panicking about running back depth. And, like, I wanted to say with the caveat that I build auction teams. I went very hard zero RB because my data last year showed that zero RB, like, those were the teams that were more successful. Like, going for a high-end quarterback, like, and honestly, half my quarterbacks are Josh Allen. Mark Andrews at tight end. And then a bunch of awesome high-end wide receivers. Do you know how stress-free my fantasy football life has been? Especially because I got Kyron Williams on a bunch of waiver wires.
Like, and also look at like the people who like spent first-round draft capital on Nick Chubb and Garrett Wilson. Their season's over.
Yep. Yeah. Honestly, sure. Like the Kelsey injury was another reason why I thought his price, like $40 for Travis Kelsey, I'm in. Like, that's worth it. $50, 25% of your budget. Like, if something happens to, like, a guy like that, I feel like that's a problem. And if you take him in the top five, I have a problem with that because you're waiting all the way to that back end. Like, maybe 10-man top five, it's not as big a deal. But, like, getting him in that 8, 9, 10 range, that's where Kelsey's value is perfect. Like, you have to be able to get that second player, though, that can, like, cushion any disaster because you have to plan for something to happen. Something 100%. Bad's going to happen to your fantasy team.
And that's the thing too, with like the Kelsey thing with like, I agreed with people, like if you're going to bid high, whatever. But like anytime I did a mock snake draft with Travis Kelsey, like 104, 105,
you felt terrible about that team, right?
I hated building my team because second round, you take like, an RB2 potentially, or like a Jalen Waddle. It's like Jalen Waddle cannot be a wide, in my opinion, cannot be a wide receiver one within the offensive scheme that he's running unless something happens to Tyreek Hill.
Right.
And then, or you'd run Jalen Hurts.
I disagree with that. I think as long as Tua stays healthy the entire season, he can. But I also think that is a very big if. Like,
I think he can be top 15.
Rolling high.
Yeah, I think Waddle can be top 15 for sure. But like we talked about all offseason.
I mean, before Tua got hurt, he was top 10 last year. Like, yeah. He started off a little slow this year because he's been injured. Yeah. But like, Tua was like the wide receiver, like 6 or 7, while Reek was the one when Tua was still going. So yeah. I don't think Waddle, that's outside of his range of outcomes. But also, like, you don't want your first receiver to be the second receiver on his team.
Yeah, it's like drafting T. Higgins too, right? Where it's like, yeah. Like in my thing here of like looking at tiers that are very flat, like some missing out on someone. Like Zachy's a very smart person who I really look to for advice and like picking his brain in the fantasy sphere.
Yeah.
He said in a dynasty context of, I'm trying to get guys who are going to be first rounders next year. And I think that bleeds into redraft too, because like,
yes.
We saw this year within at least within Snake or certain tier pricing. They got very flat, right? Where you're picking between all of the dudes who basically have the same outcome of wide receiver 17 to wide receiver 28 within 3 rounds. And it's like, I realized you got to swing for the fences at this point, right? Like, as much as I didn't want Calvin Ridley in the 3rd round or Breece Hall in the 3rd round, they provide you the most upside and have the most potential to return next year as being potential first rounders and price and Snake, where it's like, what the fuck am I losing out on if I'm going to lose anyways, right? Like, I might as well swing big, as opposed to, like, we talked the whole offseason about not trying to play for 6th, but, like, in rounds 3 through 6, I just chicken shitted out and got too conservative, and that affected my overall team structures on stuff. Of like, some guys did hit, right? We are seeing returns on guys, but, like, we need to play more aggressively in those contexts of, like, is this guy going to be a first rounder next year? Like, in the offseason when I covered Atlanta, I was like, Bijan has the ability to be 101 next year. And where are we at in the season right now? 101.
Yep. So like what I want to say with that too is Calvin Ridley, he's going to be my, like, last year, Amon-Ra St. Brown was the guy I got no shares of because I thought he was getting priced too high. And then, man, did he do well. He's a guy I like Calvin Ridley if I can get him at the right price, but I still think there was a lot of risk involved with him. But also, I love the player, but guys who missed that much time scared me. And that, like, there's a level of, for the amount that I'm spending for Calvin Ridley, I can still get, like, I mean, Calvin Ridley was going for Devonta Smith prices in auction. Yeah. And I'm going to be honest, I'd rather have Devonta Smith.
And that's the thing too. And that's the thing too, is like, he was all in Snake. He was always next to Judy, right? Where, like, in my heart of hearts, I do not believe Jerry Judy can finish top 15. I just don't believe it.
I never have, honestly.
Where to me, he was always next to Calvin Ridley. Calvin Ridley was always too expensive for me in those points. But if I was always given the choice between Ridley and Jerry Judy, even though Judy is the alpha in his offense, I would pick Calvin Ridley.
Well, for now, we know Marvin Mims exists.
Yeah, he's the real deal. But I would always pick Calvin Ridley for the context of, he provides me a bigger upside on a theoretically more high-powered offense.
Yeah, better quarterback. Like, there's so much. Yeah, if I had to choose between Calvin Ridley and Jerry Judy, I'm taking Calvin Ridley every time. Yeah. Like, I can take the L if he does end up missing half of his games.
But it's the better offense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want high-scoring offense, which is why I was all in on Gabe Davis. Like, he was so cheap for what his production's going to be.
I'm going to do my last thing here in a minute, but I do want to say, I've decided we're naming this episode Gabe Davis paternity test, because I think he needs to take one. My last point,
my baby boy.
My last point is, shut the fuck up about AJ Brown. That's my last point. Like,
okay.
I've watched people.
Oh, good God.
Talking about trading AJ Brown. Is AJ Brown washed? All this kind of stuff. Those are people.
He's like 25.
And, well, I mean, I'm talking even for redraft.
No, these, like, are the people who did not watch the same game we did. They did not. They did not watch any defense. They did not watch DeAndre Swift run for 170 yards. They did not watch DeAndre Swift get triple covered and double bracketed every fucking play.
So, like, we cannot do what Wally does. We cannot watch every game every week. And like, I get that. But at the same time, Thursday Night Football, if you didn't watch this man get a touchdown called back and then get interfered with on the next play that should have been a touchdown,
yeah,
you might understand why the stat line looked bad.
If someone is trying to trade A.J. Brown in your league, fucking go get A.J. Brown.
Right?
Correct. Go get some.
Uh-huh. Like, I will gladly trade away Calvin Ridley for A.J. Brown.
Oh, my God. I'll do it so fast.
But the narratives about the two are so crossed because people don't watch the fucking games. They look at their app, and they watch the numbers go up or down, and they're like, why isn't this going up fast enough? Like, it's... Yeah. The game is intricate, and if you don't see exactly how difficult it is to get a touchdown in the NFL, like,
look at Justin Jefferson.
Maybe there's a problem.
Dude's like,
right.
Dude's projected 10 touchdowns. He's the best wide receiver in the game, right? Like, that is an unfathomable number to be like, why can't you just do better, right? But it's like, no, that it's just that difficult.
Right. So do we have any final thoughts before we head to break?
I do have one other thing, too, that I want to kind of point out from a fantasy football lesson learned. One of the things that really, and this is something that I've always preached, is people love physical traits in their football players when they're drafting for fantasy football.
Jonathan
and
Mingo.
And none of that matters. None of that matters if the coaches aren't going to use them. And one thing that I think that, like, the process this offseason really showed, a lot of the guys you're saying, the usage that we have predicted for the most part has been on points. Mm-hmm. Like, now whether those guys are hitting, like, it's still all going to be a crapshoot. But I think, like, watching the trends of usage is so much more valuable than how athletic a guy is. Like, their athleticism plays a part if they're going to get used. But, like, let's be honest. Like, Marvin Mims, and hopefully that usage goes up early, but, you know, two catches for two targets – that's not going to help you right now. No, you're hoping that goes up. He took advantage of it, but, like, we all know there's a lot of mouths to feed, and we are hoping that the usage will go up because, like, obviously the first draft pick of the Sean Payton regime, that's his wide receiver. He's got a history of wide receivers producing, and hopefully that game helps get him a higher target share. But we also know there's a lot of mouths to feed there, and we don't know what's going to go on. So, like, taking that into account, how coaches are going to use guys matters.
They also deserve to lose that first game, because if you throw the same throw you throw to Marvin Mims in game two, they win that game, right?
Yes.
Like, that's a costly lesson as a coach to be like, okay, this dude's the real deal. He fits Russ's play style perfectly. Just moonball the fucking thing and he'll go get it.
Yep. All right. So anything else before we head to commercial?
I'm good.
All right. So we're going to go to commercial. I'm definitely going to use another Something Is Waiting riff for our break, and then we'll come back with a super flex lineup. We'll do some Shane's going to give us some props, and then Waleed's got a round of questioning for us. So we're going to go under the bright lights on the other side of this break. And goodbye. Ready to grace your wall tonight. Ready to grace your wall, all right. I feel weird doing the "and we're back," so I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. This is, some things are just more important, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
So we built our super flex lineup. We're back, baby. So I'll walk us through, and when we're done, let's share some thoughts, because we're getting a little saucy here. We've made no bones about it. We like Cousins this week, and we're pairing him with Justin Jefferson. And we actually have a run back here in our flex. We're going with Josh Kelly. Our other our other running backs are Tony Pollard and Ken Walker. But where it gets a little crazy is our second quarterback is CJ Stroud. All right. And we're pairing him with Tank Dell. We wanted Nico Collins, but such is life, can't afford it. Jacksonville is a sneaky good matchup for quarterbacks. And like Waleed said off air, CJ Stroud is throwing the most passes in the league. He's averaging 45 attempts a game.
Oh my God.
Jacksonville. Go ahead.
Playing the volume play with a good like matchup that like for a team that's going to give up yards, and that makes it more likely to score touchdowns. And let's be honest, Houston's not running the football. They can't. Their offensive line is dead.
And I still think that there's this weird stigma that since Tank Dell is short, that he's only going to play in the slot. But Tank Dell plays on the outside. He's
every last week he had the most targets of that of their receivers.
Yep.
Who would have guessed Houston would have been fantasy viable this year? Not me.
I'm going to be honest too. I did not like Tank Dell, and I'm still kind of nervous about him because of his size. But like, I will say, like, he looks good.
This is the Michael Thomas thing for me, right? Like, in redraft, I don't give a shit. If these guys are glass cannon, especially in like gambling lines, all I care about is week to week, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to produce for me week for week, like, God bless you. I hope you make as much money as your career as possible. But like, from this kind of perspective, just blow up when I play you.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is I don't know how I feel about him long term, but right now, hey, if you're showing, I will keep riding the hot hand until it's not the hot hand anymore.
Yep.
And so our last play here is a real interesting one. We are going Kyle Pitts at tight end against Detroit. Waleed, how do you feel about it?
I like Kyle Pitts. I think this is a good matchup. I think I pointed out Lions give up 9.72 yards per pass attempt to the tight end position so far this year. Last year, they were a terrible matchup for tight ends. And honestly, getting targets, he's been getting looks. The problem is Ridder kind of sucks, but he got a good matchup. And he's also played two pretty good pass defenses the first 2 weeks. Well, maybe not good pass defenses, because week one was against the Titans, right?
Week one, the Falcons played
New Orleans.
No, New Orleans played Tennessee. They played Tennessee. The Falcons played Carolina in week one.
Carolina. And the problem with the passing game wasn't that because Carolina's secondary sucks too, but their pass rush was so good. I don't think that I don't think Detroit. Well, I don't know actually. Well, Detroit did just lose Houston, so that might impact your. I don't know. Their pass rush also has issues,
and they lost C.J. Gardner-Johnson for the season.
Yeah, Detroit's having some issues. I think this could be. Kyle Pitts is going to have a get right game, and I feel like this is the one coming.
He also grew his mustache out to match Arthur Smith, so
that's huge. That's a big one. So that's our DFS lineup, and we're going to go on with our weekly plays. We're going to move on to Shane's segment. Shane, you did well last week.
I tried, man. Like, I'm trying to sharpen the sword and, like, not be as cute, but, like, this week I decided, you know what? Fuck that. We won. We're going big again.
All right.
So my first one, I didn't realize this when I did it, but I'm going to will it into existence because Zay Flowers is going to have a week.
Okay, and a hurricane.
Yep, first game of the season.
Zay Flowers is the hurricane.
Yep, first game of the season. He had six designed plays, usually bubble screens, right? So if they can't throw it far, they're going to throw it short. And Indianapolis up the second most points to wide receivers this year. So that does favor the slot, but OBJ is out. Flowers has been targeted 15 times in his first two games as a rookie. Baltimore's -8 favorites. So I believe this is going to be a Lamar game and a Zay Flowers game.
I want to point out real quick too, the Colts average target per target. They average 13.54 yards to the position for all the targets they get. So if Zay Flowers gets targets, they're usually going to be for chunk plays.
I also think too, I don't remember the line on his yardage, but I bet the over on receptions at 4.5 receptions at the time at 2.7 odds. So, I mean, that's going to be dicey with the hurricane, obviously, but I think his yards average was like 55. I think that was the line.
And Indianapolis is allowing an average of 237 yards to receivers.
Yep.
And they say They say that September showers bring Zay flowers.
I can see the smugness on your face. You are so proud of that one. And you should be. I'm going to give you flowers for that one.
I don't know who's prouder, my Zay Flowers pun or Waleed as Gabe Davis's father.
I am a very proud father.
All right. Proud papa. So you're taking Zay Flowers. Which one are we focusing on, the yards or the catches?
You could bet over on both, but I personally went over 4.5 receptions at 2.07 because I'm a sicko who wants to make more money.
All right. What else you got?
I got Javonte Williams over 49.5 rushing yards at 1.77 on Sleeper. So Miami is the fourth worst rushing defense in the NFL. Obviously, they got right in the second game compared to the first game. Javonte has put up 42 and 59 yards in his last two outings where he's seeing 12.5 snaps per game. This game's probably going to be a little bit closer just based on defensive outings as Miami has a better pass defense compared to their run defense. So Javonte should see a little bit more ground volume, in my opinion, and as well as efficiency.
I want to point out, I had like that line, like the rushing flag, and then I was just like, I don't want to bet on Denver running backs, and I just like decided not to. Like, if I'm not feeling it, I'm not going to bet it.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I also think, I mean, Miami giving up the fourth most fantasy points to running backs and allowing 135 yards to opposing backs per game is big, and like, it Javonte is still really good at football.
Yeah. And like, he's starting off slow, and he's one of those guys I'm waiting for people to just be like, I'm done with him, because he hasn't done much, because I'm going to pounce, because he's going to be a second half player in fantasy and it's going to be glorious.
Well, I mean, for us, like, I know initially I was a big hater on Denver, but I came around to him. But like, if you structured your team in a way where Javonte's your third running back, you're doing great right now.
I did in a few places.
Yeah, he's fine in the flex position. If you running backs went down, he's fine as RB2. He provides you good ceiling, whatever. So
honestly, he's my second running back in some spots because I paid up for so many other positions that I don't care. Like, he'll be there for me in the playoffs.
Well, and if you look at it, Miami allowing 135 rush yards a game on 26 carries is a 5-yard average. And if Williams gets his 13 carries a game, he goes over easy.
Yes.
Yeah.
So next quick one, bet the over on every Minnesota pass catcher. that's just the quick one. I got technically a spicy one, and then I got a Tony one. Am I allowed to do four this week?
I'm ready.
So my spicy one is Jonathan Mingo over 3.5 receiving receptions at 1.96 on Sleeper.
That's nice. Didn't he have like six targets or six receptions last week?
Yes. So like, he has 13 targets in his first two games with a 19% target share and an ADOT of 14.1. I personally think we're about to see a Jonathan Mingo boiling point here soon. I know the offense kind of has to get right. Bryce Young's still getting acclimated to the speed of the NFL. He's out for the next couple of weeks. So Dalton is under center, but I think he provides him and Hayden Hurst provide a nice safety blanket within the intermediate range. Yeah. And I think they're just going to kind of lean on those guys as well as a running game. And I think Dalton proved last year he still has it. And I don't doubt that Andy Dalton can't throw the ball for 23 times a game. And I think Mingo can get over 8 targets in the game.
Rocket is back.
This is Adam Thielen erasure.
Hey, listen, they can both coexist, right? I said he's going to get 24. They can both get points. All right, my next one is a Tony one to make up for that comment. AJ Brown over 5.5 receptions at 2.1 on Sleeper. So we saw it last week with AJ Brown getting frustrated, not getting targets in their up game. But when he's getting a 40% first read look on all his plays, I'm going with it's an AJ Brown week against the 12th worst passing defense. And I don't doubt the man. So
I love AJ Brown this week.
Is this a squeaky wheel gets the grease type of situation where they're just going
to throw
a bunch of shit at him?
And I want to point out you with the Adam Thielen erasure. I think we all know that he can get 5 catches for 10 yards.
When you're right, you're right. So
that's my props.
So your big plays are Zay Flowers over 4.5 receptions. Javonte Williams over 45.5 rushing yards. 49.5. Mingo over 3.5 receptions. AJ Brown over 5.5 receptions.
I just like that Shane and Zay Flowers are spitting in God's eye.
That's the way nature intended.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, Waleed, take us home.
So, I'm going to skip this last question, the first question, because we kind of already talked, how did we forget about Sean McVay and Matt Stafford are good? We covered it. I'm going to question number two here. Is Brock Purdy good? I'm not talking about for fantasy football, just for football purposes. I want your thoughts on that, and I will expand on it myself after you guys are done.
I think the McVay system does shield. Sorry, not McVay. The Shanahan system does shield.
They're kind of the same.
Yeah. They're fucking clones of each other. They do shield his inconsistencies, but for someone who has basically played like not even a full season in the NFL, I think he does enough, right? Like, he's not going to be a world breaker in the long term, but like, In the context of Superflex, I would be very confident starting him as my QB2 going forward from now on.
Last minute, in the breakout league, I benched Daniel Jones for Brock Purdy, and I felt so good about that decision.
Because like we talked about when I covered the Niners, you could put a fucking hand sandwich behind center in a Shanahan system, and you're going to make that quarterback
look. Here's the thing. We say that, but that's not true, because I don't think Garoppolo has ever looked as good as Brock Purdy does.
Well, he's getting better, right? Like, you saw that third and Debo, like when he put in the breadbasket on his longest attempt in his career, and it was right where it needed to be. So, Tony, I took up enough time, please.
Oh, you're good. I'm thinking a lot about the Warren Sharp team preview for Miami, and I don't want Tua to catch strays here, but the fact that, like, year over year, so Tua last year versus Tua 2 years ago, where he was forcing passes in the tightest windows in football, and then all of a sudden they got him receivers that can separate.
Yeah.
Like, there's an expected baseline of competency for an NFL quarterback, and it's above Nathan Peterman, and it's above Marcus Mariota. So, like, he's above that line. If you have open guys, he can get open guys the ball. So, like, I don't want to nitpick and be pedantic here, but, like, good, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like Kenny Pickett looks good in this offense. I think Sam Howell looks great, which, by the way, Sam Howell, tremendously underrated start to the season so far.
He's Baker too.
And so I think the answer is yes, because he successfully runs the San Francisco offense. I think Brock Purdy's a good quarterback.
So here's what I want to say, because this is what I've been noticing when I watch him. I think he's good. Now, he's got some inconsistent accuracy issues, but I think mechanically he can get cleaned up. But the thing that I notice about Brock Purdy, that, like, he does not make bad decisions. Like, he's always going to the right read every time. I don't think you can say that about Kenny Pickett. I haven't seen enough Sam Howell yet to make a judgment on that. But a lot of these guys that we're talking about, they don't see the open guy. Brock Purdy reads the field incredibly well. He might not have the athletic traits, but from the neck up, I gotta say, I'm really impressed with him.
I think that, like, there's a good chance that he, barring health and barring, you know, Kyle Shanahan being CC'd on some of those John Gruden emails, like, as long as those two stay together, there's no reason why Brock Purdy should not be starting for that team.
Well, there's a reason why they shipped the number 3 overall pick, who they gave up 3 firsts for in 2 years, 100%.
But I think I really felt like it was worth, like, throwing the spotlight on Brock Purdy, because he's playing really good football, and I know we say, like, he's got all these, like, great, he's got these great talented players around him, and that's part of it. But at the same time, like, how many times have we seen Jimmy Garoppolo just make a dumb throw? Like, even like when a guy is covered, What Purdy does is he just puts it where it's either going to go out of bounds or his guy's going to get it. He puts his guys in the best position to win. He does that thing that like the really good quarterbacks do. He's not there yet, but I feel like he's going to be like, we haven't seen the best of Brock Purdy yet, and it's going to be really interesting when he gets some of his accuracy issues down.
Can I ask you a question, both of you guys? San Francisco's offense is better with which of these two quarterbacks? Brock Purdy or Mac Jones?
Brock Purdy.
I don't know, man. Like
I've seen enough Mac Jones. I don't know that Mac Jones always makes the best decisions, honestly.
I feel like Purdy has more confidence, and I don't know if that's because like whoever the shitty ass OCs were last year in New England just like shattered his brain, right?
Yeah,
like,
because
he doesn't have the yips, but like he does make some weird things where I'm like, what was that? Right?
He's had some terrible coaching in Mac Jones's defense.
Now, I don't want Tua to catch any strays on this one, but the fact that Mac Jones is throwing to Devonta Parker, who is the league's worst separator 3 years running.
That doesn't matter, though, does it?
Well, I mean, like, didn't we think that Hunter Henry was toast before this season?
Yeah, but you know what? Hold on. I want to say Hunter Henry also fool's gold. He's had two of the best matchups the first 2 weeks of the season. I think we're going to see Hunter Henry go back to being Hunter Henry. I think this is one of those things where we're all like, oh, maybe he's good. Maybe he's good. Hunter Henry, I don't think we're wrong about him. He's been fine. He's looked. Okay, he's looked good, but he hasn't looked like he's not dominating. He's just kind of in the right spot on defenses that don't cover tight ends well. So I'm not sold yet. If he has a good week this week, I will completely backtrack because he does not have a good matchup this week.
Here's my question too, right? We're talking about like having elite talent, having really good coaching, right? So like I like to attribute Atlanta to being like the Wish Niners at this point in the season, right? Like, is Desmond Ridder good in the Shanahan system? Like, right, like he's in a system that schemes receivers open. Like,
no, because everything that I've seen Desmond Ridder is when the pocket collapses, he gets happy feet.
Yeah,
and that like week one, the reason why everyone on earth was mad at Drake London is because of Brian Burns.
Yeah,
yeah.
And you got to say, Brock Purdy, the best thing Brock Purdy has going for him is that he never has to play against Nick Bosa. So I
thank God every day I don't have to play against Nick Bosa.
And you know what?
He might,
like,
he might call you a slur.
Yeah, yeah. I know. I saw a tweet earlier in the season when he signed his extension. Like, after they talked about, like, how many black starting quarterbacks there are in the NFL, it's like, holy shit, Bosa's going to get, like, 30 sacks this year. All right, Waleed, hit us with another question, my friend.
So we kind of touched on this. I'm just gonna ask this, and this is a very open-ended question. I want you guys to fill it out, and I don't have too many thoughts on it, but I just want your thoughts. What if Baker Mayfield keeps this going? I want to know what you think about that.
I think in the context of where you're leading this to be is like fantasy finish, right? So
fantasy or regular football, go ahead and go with it where you want. This is very open-ended.
I'll go both. I'll go fantasy, right? So like my caveat with that is like, if he does keep it up, he has to beat up a lot of people to get that type of finish, right? Like he's clearly separated himself from like the bottom 25, not bottom 25, like from 32 to like 20, right? Like, but like you said earlier, he's had easier defenses to play against, but to finish within like this weird range of like top 10, top 15 quarterbacks, he's got to beat out like the Herberts. I mean, Burrow's had a slow start. He might not finish as a top 15 if this injury continues and whatever the fuck the Bengals are doing. But and like in regards to like NFL thing, like as long as he doesn't mess this up, right? Like say Minnesota just implodes this year, right? They fall apart. Like even further, Kirk's out of his contract. Like what's stopping them from giving Baker a 1 year deal to put the patchwork together for another like tank season while they, if they want to sell off a top end draft pick or something like that, like he's obviously playing himself into a contract. This is what his game in LA was, or his tenure in LA was last year. Those games have no consequence, and he played himself into a one-year deal where now he's slowly snowballing himself into, like, I don't know, like, the Sam Howell experiment doesn't work out, or Desmond Ritter is just so shit that Arthur Smith's like, we could have won the division, but we didn't because of you. All right, you're going to bench, and we're going to have Baker for 2 years here, right?
Yeah. I think to answer your question, like, we're finally seeing Baker Mayfield with two elite NFL wide receivers. I mean, the year that he looked best to start the year was 2020, when Landry and OBJ were both healthy. And I don't think that Baker Mayfield makes the people around him better, but I think that the people around him can take Baker Mayfield's core competency as an NFL player and bring out the best in him.
I think this is David Njoku erasure. Is what
I agree. Is. Absolutely it is. And I'm fine with that. I accept that. I think that, like, I don't think Baker is a bad quarterback. I don't think he was ever a bad quarterback. When your offensive coordinators have been, like, Matt fucking Rhule.
Did you, like, that stat they showed during the Bears game of all the different offensive coordinators he had, like, in, like, a 2 year span
yeah.
was madness. Like, Baker Mayfield has had to go through an incredible amount of adversity.
Well,
Sean McVay was just like, hey, bro, just do your best. And they won that game, right?
Dude, yeah. that was one of the most fun Thursday night farceballs. You know what I liked the most is when I looked for that tweet, there were randos that were actually using that hashtag that I have no idea who they were. But I just like that we got through to some people with the Let Baker Bake.
Well, like, if we circle back to the first question you asked about Brock Purdy, like, those are two very different styles of play, but they both get results.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? Brock Purdy is the very conservative check down. I'm going to make two reads on a play. And if I don't find that those first two reads, I'm just dumping it off to McCaffrey, which is a pretty good third option. Whereas Baker Mayfield is like, he reminds me a lot of like Jay Cutler, where he's like, fuck it. We're doing this, like, cannon. We're letting the cannons fly. And it also helps, by the way, that Mike Evans is the greatest wide receiver since Michael Irvin at getting away with offensive pass interference.
Yes, he is. And that's a skill. That is a skill.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I give him all the credit in the world for it. If they're not, like, going to fucking, like, call it.
It was infuriating, but at the same time, like, Michael Irvin even says that he used to, like, just ask refs, what are you looking for, to make sure he knew what he could get away with. And that's your job, to find those, like, nuances within the rules to exploit.
Yeah. So before we go.
Oh, I'm not done. I still have a couple more questions, guys.
Even we're better. Not, oh, this,
yeah. And I want to say, point out real quick, I have three more questions here. But, right. Your correct answer to the Baker Mayfield, what if he keeps this going? That just makes football more fun, is the answer. Because Baker Mayfield being good at football is better for football, because Baker Mayfield is awesome.
If Baker Mayfield makes the Pro Bowl, we will find evidence of Bigfoot.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you're right. We will. Okay, so here is my next question for you. After Christian McCaffrey, which running back would you who is the running back you want the most in fantasy football?
Bijan.
It's much closer, even though I do want to say Bijan. I think it's also Tony Pollard.
I'm gonna say it right now. I kind of rewrote this question on the fly, and the question was, outside of Christian McCaffrey, is there a running back in fantasy football you'd rather have than Bijan Robinson? Because the answer should be no, because Bijan is the truth.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm not debating that at all, but I'm just, like, in the context of, like, fantasy potential finish, like,
yeah.
Tony Pollard has, like, the highest red zone snap percentage of
And that's right fair. Now. I will say this. Like, I knew that I should have been higher on the Cowboys because I thought that defense was going to be elites. But the problem is, and you know, yeah, oh, it is. And the problem I have is I hate Mike McCarthy so much. Everybody and that 100% like slanted my bias, because I should have just picked the Cowboys to win the division because they were 100% going to win the division.
Well, yeah, and like you're seeing how they're playing, right? Like it's Dak doing easy things because McCarthy's like, okay, you kept fucking it up because Kellen Moore's system doesn't fit you, right? So let's just have the defense just run over people, have Dak not mess up, and just have Tony Pollard punch it in, right? Like that's all they're doing to win. And that's enough. Yeah. That's and all you have to do.
And it's the right thing to do.
And I know that our answers are being colored by the fact that like half the running backs in the league are out right now. So I'm assuming we're talking like the player pool of available players right now. Because yes. if we're talking the beginning of the year, Nick Chubb's in that conversation.
100%.
But right now, the only running back not named Bijan Robinson that I'd put in the same tier as Christian McCaffrey is Derrick Henry.
I would maybe include Saquon in that, because Saquon looked so good before that ankle injury.
That's true, but
their O-line is so fucking trash now, though. That's the problem, man. That team is sad now.
Yeah, like that's the thing. If you watch that Giants Cardinals game, I don't know how the Giants won that game. The Cardinals were clearly the better team, and. Yes. This is something Tony and I keep talking about. Anyone who's actually watched the Arizona Cardinals, you're like, they're really well coached. Like, we were making fun of who's the defensive coordinator from the Eagles, who's now their head coach?
Gannon.
We were making fun of what a dorky goofball he looked like, how he just looked dumb and bad. And I'll be honest, he's killing it. My respect for him has grown tenfold just watching these first two games of the Cardinals. He's doing a good job. People are acting like they're going to have the first pick. They might have Houston's first pick, but they're not going to pick in the top five the way they are coached. They are going to win games just because they're a good team, like with no talents, unfortunately. Well,
pin this to the top of my fucking Twitter profile right now. You should be buying Hollywood Brown.
I put in a waiver claim for him. Someone cut Hollywood Brown, and I was like, what? Why?
In Dynasty, someone traded Jerome Ford for Hollywood Brown. And I was like, dude, that is an insane trade.
That's a panic move.
I'm going to tell you this right now. When Kyler comes back with the way that offense is set up, Hollywood Brown has league winner written all over him.
He is good. He is so fun. I'm glad I got some shares of him this year. And that leads into my next question. Is Joshua Dobbs good? That guy came in with no playbook, and I don't know if you've watched him the last couple of weeks, it's a product of that offense. Like, I'm just curious. Is he good? Like, what do you think?
I think it goes back to the whole thing of people are playing for money, right? Like these guys are playing for contracts where they kind of have to be lights out. Otherwise this is the end of their career.
Yeah.
Where like,
right. Like you, there are like plenty of quarterbacks who've been in that situation who have not looked as good as Josh Dobbs.
Where it's like, true. There's also confidence in the team too, because like they're all trying to do their best because they're like, hey, we know we've been clowned on for the last fucking 8 months. Right. So like, hey, maybe we should try a little bit. Right. So I don't know. I haven't watched enough of the Arizona games, but I mean, if you're going neck and neck and end up choking against like the Giants, who have had really a really hard matchup in week one, and you're basically throwing the game away. Like they're, like you said, they're better than you think they are. And that doesn't fall apart with the quarterback, especially when they're bearing a talent, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the deal. I don't think he's bad, but I don't think he's good. I think he's a competent game manager.
Yeah.
And I think that say next year, say he decides to stay in Arizona as a backup next year. If Arizona spends their first two picks on the left tackle from Notre Dame and Marvin Harrison Jr. And all of a sudden, like Kyler goes down, Josh Dobbs, actually, I would take over at least 10 starting quarterbacks for fantasy football.
I think so too. Yeah. I don't know that I think he's good, but I thought it was worth pointing out that Josh Dobbs, these first two games of the season, he's looking like they've been balling, and A lot of it is on a guy who came in, didn't know the playbook. He just walked onto the field and just like took the reins, and good for him. And I'm rooting for him.
Oh, absolutely. All right.
No. The last question. I'm ending this one on a doozy.
Bring it on.
So if the Vikings start off 0-3 or 0-4, do they trade Kirk Cousins? That's what I heard. And it blew my mind, because if you're the Jets, you don't want to take a shot at Kirk Cousins because you're built to win now.
But like what does Minnesota ask for Kirk Cousins? You can't ask for a first, right? But like, you still need high end draft capital. But
I think if you can get a second rounder for Kirk Cousins, get him off the books, and if you've lost all your games and you just go hard for Caleb or for Drake May, that could be a huge win for the Vikings.
The problem with that, though, is I think that Green Bay still owns weird rights to the Aaron Rodgers second round picks. So they have to, like, the Jets have to give some more up to be able to trade those picks.
Oh, that's true. They do.
Unless you're allowed to trade like a 25.
I mean, you could trade other picks. Hell, they could do a first rounder 2 years from now if they wanted to.
I say no, and it's because Minnesota is on the verge of the Justin Jefferson extension. And if you want to tell this guy, hey, we recognize you're the best player in the league, but you're going to have to adjust to a new quarterback. Also, here's like a below market value offer. He's going to be like, fuck off. Goodbye.
Okay, that's interesting. But someone pointed out, like, do you trade Kirk Cousins? I heard that, it blew my mind. So I just wanted to see what you guys had to say, and I thought it'd be a fun question to end with.
I think it makes sense.
Dude, yeah. Do you think if, say, they don't trade him, right, and they finish like bottom eight, do they re-sign him? He's expensive, right? Like, he's not going to take.
He's going to be expensive, and it's one of those things where if they're bottom eight, though, like, because there's going to be three first round quarterbacks in this class, you can always trade up and try to get a guy. Everyone's acting like this is the end of Kirk Cousins. Frankly, they started off 0-2, but it's kind of like Tampa Bay's defense is really freaking good. And you lost to the Eagles. And honestly, I don't think they're going to start 0-3. Sorry, Shane, but like Staley is on the path to be fired.
No, this is like what I said all offseason. It's going to be, we were going to hit a skid. I said it like three times. The Chargers are going to have 0-3. We're going to hit the bye week and he's fucking gone.
Yeah.
And he deserves to be gone.
And I think I said it too. Like, I think part of the reason Kellen Moore is there is to be your next head coach.
I also want to say, if the Vikings end the season, first off, at the Vikings end of the season bottom eight, Kirk Cousins got hurt.
But if
the Vikings end the season 500, it's not because of Kirk Cousins.
It's the O-line.
No, it's the O-line in that defense. I mean, although I will say this, as bad as that defense is, it is so much better than last year. Like, just competent coaching makes a difference. They don't have the dogs there yet, but they've been in a weird hybrid rebuild. Like, where they still have like the way to win now, but they also still have to retool that entire defense. And when you try to do both, it just kind of keeps you average.
Yeah,
which is why I don't mind what the Bears did, even though God, does it suck?
It's ass right now.
Yeah.
But like I gotta say, like as a fan of fantasy football and as a fan of fucking points, God, I fucking love that they went receiver in the first round. Like, that's so sick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I look at, you know, they passed over Joey Porter Jr. They had cornerbacks available. You had, let's see, I'm looking at it right now. You had Mazi Smith, who's in Dallas right now. And
dude, I wanted him so badly on the Bears as a three technique. He would have been so freaking good.
Right, and they passed over Nolan Smith at linebacker.
Yeah.
And like, those are guys within that range that you could have made the argument for. Julius Brents in Indianapolis. Like, you could have made the argument, hey, Minnesota, even like trade back and get another couple extra picks in the top 60.
But we would have gave you fucking a pick for Jordan Addison, bro. Right. Chargers would have. Chargers should have done that. I don't. Whatever. I'm.
Yeah. I mean, Cam Smith, Keanu Benton, like those are all guys that, like, look at. I gotta say, even though I'm trying to avoid as much Bears talk right now as the ceiling is crumbling.
That's episode 99.75.
I don't even want to do that. I gotta say, like, that guy that the Bears took in round two, Tyreek Stevenson at cornerback, has been a difference maker. He's been great.
Yeah.
And
well, he's been getting picked on, but at the same time, you can see that he's got talents.
Well, that's the thing, right? You're a rookie quarterback or you're a rookie CB. They're going to throw at you and make you prove your worth. And so I think that, like, Minnesota is saying, like, hey, Kirk, go get us a fucking chip, bro. And also your defense is not going to help you in any way whatsoever. So just go fucking chuck it, man. And I'm here for it.
Yeah. I will say this to Hub Arkish, actually. I was listening to him talk about the Bears defense. He's like, look, it's going to take a few weeks, but it's going to be better. Like, and he's
pretty worse.
And he's usually pretty negative on the Bears, but listening to him say that, I was like, all right, I like that he sees that, because I kind of see it too. Honestly, last week, I didn't hate the way the Bears defense showed. Like, that was all on the offense, because the Bears have no pass rush. The fact that they were, like, doing some of the things they were doing was nice, especially with all the pass interference that Mike Evans is getting away with.
I would have given, as a Bears fan, I would have given up our first this upcoming year to get Chris Jones.
Oh, I would have too.
Like,
I don't think that was an option. Also. No,
but during the contract extension issues, I'm just like, what do you want?
Yeah.
What do you fucking want? We signed Ngakoue. What do you fucking want? And unfortunately, though, as Shane can tell you, signing older defensive linemen to big contracts doesn't necessarily help you. In fact, sometimes it hurts.
Khalil Mack has no pressures this year. What the fuck?
That can't be true, because I watched him getting, like, I watched that game. He was in the backfield. He was doing damage. They were calling his name.
But he's not the return on investment that they paid a second rounder for.
That's fair, but I think part of the problem with that too is I don't think Khalil Mack is the problem. I think it's that back seven that's just completely
fucking terrible.
Yeah,
fucking terrible. That and we can make fun of Minnesota for drafting offense in the first round. Quentin Johnson over a DT or a linebacker or an edge rusher or a safety, like, because I mean, we think this Chargers defense looks bad now. Wait until Derwin James gets his annual, like, season-ending injury.
He was fine last year. Okay, everybody, shut up. Okay, listen. I don't have a problem.
That just means he's due.
I don't have a problem. I don't have him. Okay, that's fair, because J.C. Jackson died on that cross, as he should have, because that dude fucking sucks. Yep. I don't have a problem with the QJ pick at all. I don't have a problem with it. The problem I have with it now is you spend first round draft capital and you are not putting this dude in the offense. The problem is you spend this high end draft capital with a very good offensive minded coach. Why are we not putting him in the offense? Let's see what we have. What are we losing out here to go 0-3? Who gives a shit? Let's see.
I have a little bit of a problem with it, because let's be honest here. Okay, Addison, when you have Justin Jefferson, but who's your other receiver? KJ Osborne. You got Mike Williams and you have Keenan Allen. I'm sorry. You don't need. And yeah, I know you hate Mike Williams, but you're wrong. Mike Williams is a baller.
No, I don't hate Mike Williams. The problem with the Chargers offense and, like, the management, it just seems like they're just waiting for something to happen, right? It just feels like they're like, okay.
The problem with the Chargers offense is there isn't a problem. They're put up over 20 points a game. The problem is you needed to invest and build a good defense. Your head coach is a defensive-minded guy.
No, he's a PR defense guy.
Defense gets torched. Oh, I'm look. He was riding that Aaron Donald train. That's all that was.
But you know what I'm saying, though, right? It's like you have these the offense is, it's good, but it's like we're not swinging for the fences with the first round draft capital. Like, why are we seeing Josh Palmer and Gerald Everett out there, right? Like, you have this high end ceiling talent. Why not put him in that role and just see what you have? If the dude doesn't do shit for 6 weeks, then you just put the other dudes in who you already know can do it, right?
Part of that might be on him. Like, oh, yeah, you gotta earn playing time. And
well, I guess, but at the same time,
some rookies are gonna develop more. Did Baltimore pick before the Chargers?
They did.
Well, then I was gonna say, because if you had passed on Zay Flowers, you deserve everything you got.
Flowers and Jason and Addison, dude, all ripped before QJ. But like this is the thing about, like, say, to like make the comparison to like the Bears, right? Justin Fields looked great in camp because he was playing against the Bears defense.
Yes.
Same thing with Quentin Johnson and the Chargers pass defense. He looked great in camp because
the difference is you guys have been putting up over 20 points a game. Okay. Well, you know what? Oh, okay. Week two, we didn't, but at least the Bears got to 20 points in garbage time. Oh, good God.
Well,
Sunday's going to be so bad.
And we look forward to it. So I think, unless anyone else has any thoughts, I think this is it for episode 99 and a half.
Should I try to come up with another question real quick? No.
No,
I keep cutting you off. No, I got one more question.
So next week, we are going to have episode 100 of TH Fantasy. Waleed is going to be returning. We're going to have some of the Football Absurdity Brain Trust come on. Walker Kelly, Jeff Crisco will be on. Ryan will be back. And Craig, Shane, and myself will return. Final thoughts. What's the best game of the weekend?
Chargers Vikings.
Yeah. Because someone's gonna be in panic mode and we don't know.
Someone's gonna lose their job over this game.
No, I really like how the Vikings are coached, honestly.
Oh no, it's not you, it's us.
Yeah,
don't worry.
You do not associate me with the Vikings, please. I hate
my dark horse best game of the week is Houston and Jacksonville.
I like
that. That's a solid dark horse. You know, it could be like the best game of the week in the worst possible ways. Also, Steelers Raiders.
Yeah, that's gonna be.
If you want Schadenfreude, that could be it.
Check my article on Football Absurdity that should be posting tomorrow with my betting lines of the week. The Pittsburgh Vegas under at 43 is one of my top plays of the week.
Ooh, that's an interesting play.
Check out Gambletown tomorrow or today when this goes live.
Yeah, whatever. The internet's not real.
Yeah.
All right. Good night, everybody. Have a great night. Enjoy the games, and we'll see you next week for episode 100.
Peace.
Bye.
Derek Carr.